everyone, and welcome to episode 27 of the Home Hour podcast. This is the show where we talk about family, food, parenting, homemaking, and everything that happens inside your four walls. I'm your host and creator of thehappiesthome.com, Megan Francis, and I'm here to keep you entertained and inspired while you go about your life at home. So you might have noticed that there was no podcast last week. It was our spring break, and I decided that the craziness of trying to record while the kids were at home and even editing, because we do a lot of our recording ahead of time, but even just kind of editing all the pieces together and taping the intro and the conclusion, I do all that after the fact, usually just the day before the podcast goes live, and it proved to be a little bit too hard to do when there was a bunch of kids running around. But we're back this week, and I'm really excited about today's episode. Our featured interview today is with Heather Reed. She's a musician who's also a mom, and was so fascinated by all the parallels between her life as a musician mom and my life as a writer mom. Plus, if you know me at all or have read my blog for a while, you might know that I'm a total musical theater geek. And in addition to her background as a singer-songwriter, Heather also created and staged a musical, which is sort of this dream of mine that's been on the back burner for way too long, and who knows if I'll ever realize it. But when I think about what I would want to do with my life one day, writing and staging a musical is one of them, is one of the things. So I was really excited to talk to Heather, and I can't wait to introduce you to her a little later in the show. But first, our resident style expert, Shayna Dragelis, is here to talk about high school reunions. How do you dress to impress without looking like you're trying too hard? And did you know that there's a thing in the fashion blogging world called an arm party? Shayna and I discuss that and much more. Hey everyone, I am back with my friend Shayna of Ain't No Mom Jeans for another style segment. Welcome back, Shayna.
Thanks, Megan. So glad to be here.
I am so glad to have you, and I know people are just loving this segment. So so glad to have someone who can actually talk about style in a way that makes sense and not just like me, and I would just ramble the whole time. So thank you. Very grateful for you. So this week, we are talking about high school reunions. My 20th high school reunion would actually be coming up this spring, except I don't think anyone from my graduating class of 80 people got on the ball to actually plan anything, but we're going to pretend like maybe they're going to throw something together at the last minute, and then Shayna can give some advice about what to wear to one's high school reunion, because it's an event where you want to look your best. It might be the first time you've seen these people in a while, or maybe you've changed a lot, or haven't changed at all, whatever the case may be. So Shayna, lay your advice on us, please.
All right, so Megan, first of all, it's kind of funny because my 20-year high school reunion is coming up this July.
Okay.
So I've been putting a lot of thought into this question. And so the high school reunion dressing is tricky because you want to look amazing but effortless. Uh-huh. And, you know, because nobody really wants to make it look like they spent all of this time trying to figure out what to wear to their high school reunion, because there's still this thing of like, right. Oh gosh, I don't even know if I'm going.
Yeah.
My fabulous life.
And it's not the prom, right? So
exactly. It's not the prom. But you still want to go, and you still want to look like a knockout. Mm-hmm. So it's tricky. You have to look so amazing yet like you put no effort into it whatsoever. So there's a couple tricks I always pull out when you want to sort of get that balance of awesome but effortless. And I think it's combining. I think the secret for me, at least, is to combine dressy pieces with very casual pieces.
Okay.
So, for example, if you have a dress that looks amazing on you, but you're worried it's going to be a little too dressy, I think toning it down with like a leather cuff bracelet, or even like turquoise bracelets or necklaces or something that's a little bit more casual helps, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or, the other way you can go is to take casual pieces like, I don't know if jeans are ever, I mean, if your reunion's casual,
let's stop right there, because here's one of the things that I feel like would be my very first question is, how do I even know what is appropriate? It's always that, like, is this a black tie event, or is this, you know, a Sunday best event, or is this like a casual Friday event? Like, how do you even know? Are you looking at the venue? Is there some subtle clue, like, in the invitation itself? How can you figure that out when you're dressing for an event?
Yeah, no, I think looking at the venue is the first step. Okay. You know, typically if the reunion is going to have like a picnic, that's a whole different thing. Then it's completely casual.
Okay.
But, and if there's like a meet and greet, often the reunion will cover multiple days.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's pressure.
Yeah, so sometimes like the first night is a little more casual with like the main event being a little more dressy if it's the second night.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. See,
it's tricky.
My husband and I went to the same high school, and his class for their 15th reunion, they were going to do it in a barn on someone's property, and then the guy's mom came home and said they couldn't have it there, so then they had to go downtown to the bar instead. So not exactly the sort of event where I guess you'd be wearing evening wear or even, you know, maybe anything besides like jeans and a sweatshirt. But I'm sure most people are not facing that kind of a situation.
It feels like high school all over again. His mom came home and was like, you can't be here.
Right. Well, it's the same barn that I think that they partied at in high school. So, yes, it's a very unusual situation. But it just goes to show you that sometimes this idea, this like TV idea we have of what, you know, our experiences are going to be like up to and including the reunion, it's not always reality.
Yes.
So anyway, your advice is good. Look at the venue.
Right. I think most reunions are sort of like that sort of medium casual or medium dressy.
Okay.
You know, I think it's a rare high school reunion that's like, yeah, we're going black tie.
Right.
I mean, maybe, but in general, I think if you want to go with a cute dress and some nice shoes and kind of play low key on the jewelry, I think you're in good shape. If your reunion is a little bit more casual, I think you could do jeans with like some killer shoes and some like amazing jewelry, and that would be okay too.
So this is a question just popped into my head when you were talking about the dress. Okay. I own a lot of dresses. In the summer, I basically live in them, and they really range from very casual up to not so casual, but sometimes there's like those dresses that kind of cover different ground, and you know, it could be casual depending on what you're wearing it with. So I wonder if there's a way that you can, like, do you ever have like an emergency out? Like, say you wear this dress and it's just sort of like a, you know, a basic dress, and then you get there and you realize everyone's more dressed up than you. You can like do a quick change and add something to it, or like take something away.
You totally could. I would probably just go dressed up to begin with. But because I think it's easier to take things off, maybe.
What kind of high school reunion are you going to?
Well, that's right. But my friend Sarah was pregnant with her, I don't know, like third kid or something, and she had to go to a wedding. And so, you know, like those Jersey maxi dresses that you can get like at Target for, you know, $15 or whatever. They're just like black Jersey maxi dresses that everybody has.
Yeah.
Okay. We managed to dress that thing up for a wedding just because she was pregnant and didn't want to buy another dress. And and she went and she looked fabulous and had a great time. And it can be done, but what did we do? We added like a really statement grabbing necklace, and also we went major with shoes, nice big high heels and a bright color to sort of, you know, pull it all together. And then she carried a fancy purse, little clutch purse. And it was great. And that's actually a pretty good example of making it look effortless. Cause she did just look like, oh, I'm pregnant and I just threw this on and now I look amazing and fabulous. And, you know, people were complimenting her all night. So,
but a black dress like that, especially kind of that shape, like the maxi dress shape, seems like it's easy to do that too. If you had sort of like a cotton plaid dress, might be a little tougher.
That's a little tougher.
So maybe the idea is to go with something sort of basic.
Yes. Something basic or, you know, I don't know. I think dressing up too is not like, if you have a dress where you're like, oh, I don't know, if maybe this is too dressy. I don't know. I think that is probably, it might be okay. I always think if you err on the side of being overdressed.
You won't go wrong.
You won't go wrong.
Although now it feels better to be a little overdressed than a little underdressed.
Yes.
Yes. I find that when I'm a little underdressed, I feel like I'm completely underdressed, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you brought up bright colored shoes, and that made me think of something else, something I always think I put a little too much stress into, and that's making my shoes coordinate with my bag. You know, like everything has to sort of go, and I know that that's not always true. So what is your sort of rule of thumb when you're trying to – do you match your shoes to your purse? Do you think that that's outdated advice?
Yeah.
I don't mean matchy-matchy. You know what I mean.
Yeah, I probably would not match so intentionally. I think a better approach is to look at the tones of color. So if you have a really bright shoe, a really bright bag goes, but I wouldn't necessarily make them the same color.
Okay. Okay.
Does that make sense?
So you mean like I could wear like bright green shoes and carry a bright, you know, yellow bag?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. I think that'd be fantastic. I also like patterns too. I think you can adding either patterned shoes or a patterned bag in to your outfit makes everything look, you know, a lot more interesting.
So I have to tell you, I know this is off topic, but remember how last time we were talking, or maybe it was a couple of times ago, you advised me to buy a floral scarf and wear it
Yes.
with plaid.
Yes.
Now, I didn't do that because I realized I don't have any plaid tops that like are the right weather right now, although it's getting nice out again, so I probably will soon. But I did get sort of a watercolor-y scarf.
Okay.
And I got a cream-colored, like, you know, fake leather jacket. And then under that, I've been wearing a striped shirt, and it
Excellent.
Looks very cute. So,
hey,
I've made progress.
This is progress. I'm so glad.
Yeah.
You could, the other fun way to dress down a dress too is to add a little scarf, and it also helps with the air conditioning.
Oh, right. Because the air conditioning is always going to be a problem. So for people who don't spend a lot of time in hotel conference rooms, which is often where events are held, and I've spent a lot of my last 5 years of my life in hotel conference rooms, you always want to plan for it to be like sub-zero in there.
Yes.
Anywhere from sub-zero up to so stuffy and hot you can't stand it. Really, it could be anywhere. And it might be in that range, like within the space of an hour. It could go from, you know, like freezing, goose pimples, really wanting to wear a parka up to like you can't stand it. It's so hot. So what are your thoughts on sweaters, Shana? Like, you know, like a shrug or like – I feel like those have gone through so many iterations of styles over the last few years and what's available from – remember a few years ago where it was like the – almost didn't even look like a sweater. It was just like something with sleeves on it that connected in the back.
Yes, I do. I feel like nothing kills a good outfit faster than a cardigan sometimes. Like, they're so practical and they're so comfortable and I'm always cold. And so I always think that I should have these cardigans on, but I just really hate how they look most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with a dress. You're talking about little shrugs though.
Well, I'm talking about the whole gamut because I feel like I'm always cold too. And I'm always one of those, like I'm the person who's in Florida and I'm like the old lady on the beach walking down. Like, it's like 80 degrees and then this beautiful summer breeze like, you know, blows across my shoulders. And I'm like, ow, I'm so cold. So I always want some kind of backup.
Yeah.
But then I go to the store and I look at what's there and I think, well, I just have this pretty dress. I don't want to just throw something over it.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't want to be all exposed. So what do you do?
So you know that like little faux leather jacket you just bought?
Yes.
That would be fantastic.
Oh. All right. It's pretty cash. Would it be all right with like a fancier dress?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I really little faux leather jackets or moto jackets over floaty dresses is a really cute look.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of hits that sort of effortless note that we're going for. So that is a good option. Sometimes a blazer. It depends on the dress.
Yeah.
It's hit or miss. But you know, sometimes you can work a blazer in there too. In general, I think jackets are a safer bet than cardigans if you're trying to warm up a dress. Or the other thing I love is actually a poncho.
Oh, okay.
I used like just like a very basic cream colored sweater poncho over a bridesmaid dress a couple years ago.
Oh.
And that worked really well.
Interesting. I would have thought that would have looked sort of, I don't know, sloppy or baggy or something. You know, like would it, like it would cover it.
You know, and it does, but it's ponchos. I love ponchos. I think that they are flattering on so many different body types. And, you know, what you end up having is a little like flash of arm and a little flash of collarbone and,
oh, yeah,
and a really pretty skirt coming out. So it all sort of works.
I like that. Okay. So you touched a little bit on jewelry, but let's go back to that really quick because I think that we didn't talk about that enough. And that is one of those things that obviously can pull everything together.
Yes.
Also belts, right? So like if you have a dress, like what is the belt? What's going on with belts today? I know for a while it was like, just put a belt on it. It felt like everything, there were all these outfits and it was just like, oh, just throw a belt on it and it'll be fine. But is that still kind of the way things are?
You can accessorize with a belt, belting a little dress. That would be cute. Okay. Yeah. But I don't think you have to. I feel like you're right. There was a look for a long time and it was like, you know, like you said, put a belt on it. But I think there's a lot more flexibility now.
And sometimes now it's like put like, you know, a dozen tiny belts on it and then crisscross them all over each other.
Yeah, that's like a fashion blogger complicated level.
Yeah, I know. And I'm looking at it like, I don't even own that many belts. I'm not sure I want to own that many belts.
Well, like the big thing now is the, what do they call it? The arm parties, where you like stack up a bunch of different bracelets.
Wait, they call that an arm party?
An arm party. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So you could totally, I mean, it's a great look and it's a easy way to, again, dress down a dress if you're feeling like it might be a little bit too much, or if you have a little black dress that's a tad boring.
Okay.
And you can just go nuts with stacking bracelets on either one or both wrists.
So do you mean like bangly kind of bracelets or like cuff bracelets or just all of the above?
All of the above.
I feel like that would make me feel sort of like a mummy or something, like I wouldn't be able to bend. Like I wouldn't have joints available.
Megan, how high are you stacking these bracelets?
I don't know. You just said arm party. I'm visualizing it like going all the way up, but I guess maybe I took it the wrong way. This is evidently not something I'm familiar with. But
yeah, that would be a serious investment in bracelets.
Right. But you know, I mean, fashion bloggers have to like invest in this stuff. So you never know.
This is true.
So okay, that brings me to yet another question. See, every time we talk, like I have a million questions and then it goes on way too long. But this one I think is really important. So please listen.
Okay. I always do, Megan.
I know you do. Pairing of jewelry. Say I have a chunky necklace that's like close to my face, like it's kind of like tighter on my neck. Do I wear different earrings with that than I would with a long dangly necklace? And if so, what's the difference? And do I wear both of those things with the bracelets, or is it like I just pick one or two and not do the whole thing?
Yeah, in general. Now, keep in mind, I'm a child of the 90s, and so I grew up with the whole minimalist thing going on.
Right.
So there are people out there who pull off necklaces and bracelets and earrings all at once. Mm-hmm. I'm just not one of those people.
Okay.
So in general, I think you should just pick two.
Okay.
You know, earrings and a bracelet, necklace and a bracelet are both pretty foolproof, or just one. But earrings and necklace, that can be tricky.
Yeah.
I tend to only do earrings and a necklace if I'm doing like a delicate layered necklace look.
Okay.
But if I have like a big chunky necklace, I usually rethink the earrings.
Yeah, I had this really cute necklace that was very chunky and like big bobbly kind of beads. And I actually got it with earrings. And then I saw a picture of myself wearing the two together. And I looked like like an older woman, like at a church event. Like I should be wearing like a brocade shift dress or something. Do you see what I'm going with here?
I totally see.
And like carrying a Jell-O mold like that. And like my hair should be in that sort of set and go look. And I didn't realize it when I bought the two together. And I don't know, I'm not sure how I missed it when I put them on. I guess I didn't look at myself pretty closely. But
well,
you know.
I mean, I feel like retailers do their best to confuse you because they sell so many things in these awful sets. And I'm always like, what?
Yeah.
So
Yeah. And I also think your hair length makes a big difference. Like, I feel like I can get away with less clutter around my head now than I could when I had longer hair.
Yeah, that is probably true.
Because I have nothing to hide it. So it's just really, I'm just really out there with whatever I have.
Yes, definitely. So. Yeah, jewelry is tricky. And it also depends on the neckline too.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I mean,
one of my favorite necklines, especially at a reunion where you're going to be taking pictures of each other. I think so, right?
I would assume.
Yeah. I mean, I think people are taking pictures. Consider the neckline you have on your dress.
Okay.
Shirt. I think one shoulder is a really sophisticated neckline, and it's flattering on just about all body types. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those necklines where you might want to just skip the jewelry then.
Well, yeah, because I have a one shoulder dress and I love it, but nothing – earrings look fine, but like nothing no necklaces ever look no, – there's no length that works.
Right.
It's either, you know, the long ones look weird because it's like different on each side and that doesn't work. But it's but it's so interesting that you almost don't need anything.
Right.
It's so interesting to look at.
I agree. I also like strapless too. If you can find a strapless that doesn't give you those awful side boob things. Strapless is a really flattering neckline for photos, I think.
And then would you wear like a shorter, if you did wear a necklace, would you just wear something shorter with it that didn't come down? Like how much space would you want between the bottom of the necklace and the top of the dress?
Oh goodness. I didn't bring my
ruler. Not to get so technical. Like I don't think you need a ruler. but
in general, if I'm wearing something strapless, there's a couple things I do. Sometimes I'll wear a shorter, chunkier necklace.
Okay.
Sometimes I'll wear a scarf. Actually, most of the time I wear a scarf because I'm cold.
Yeah.
Or if you have like one of those long, delicate necklaces, especially if your strapless dress comes down a little bit in the front, mm-hmm. or even if you have a V-neck dress, this is another good trick, tuck the necklace inside your bra. So it just kind of like disappears into your cleavage.
I love that.
It's really sexy.
And also then you don't have to deal with like something kind of swinging around and getting stuck on one of your boobs.
Yes, there's that too.
Which, it's just not a great look.
Never a good look.
Oh boy. Well, this is very cool. I'm glad to have all these bits of advice in case my student council members or whoever my classroom leadership chooses to get on the ball and throw something together here. If not, maybe I'll just tag along with somebody else to their high school reunion and I can put these bits of advice into play.
You're always welcome to join me at mine, Megan.
Oh, great. I'm going to totally do it now. That'd be funny. All right, Shayna. Well, this has been so fun. Again, for everyone, Shayna is at aintnomomjeans.com. You can find her there and I'll link to all, you know, her stuff in the show notes of today's episode, and she'll be back with us in a few weeks. So nice having you on today, Shayna.
Thanks, Megan. Always a pleasure.
Hi all, Megan again. I hope you enjoyed Shayna and I discussing everything you need to know about dressing for your high school reunion. I'll link to Shayna's blog and all of her other stuff in the show notes, which will be at thehappiesthome.com/episode27. Now it's time to move on to my interview with musician mama Heather Reed. Heather started off in the 90s in an alt-rock band called The Murmurs and went on to perform in two other bands, which we talk about in the interview today. She also wrote a musical called Dear Bernard, which was produced in LA. Now she's a mom of twin 4-year-old boys and has recently launched a solo career, releasing an album called Crossroads. I loved talking with Heather because, as it turns out, it's not so different being a work-at-home writing mom and a work-at-home singing mom. We have a lot of the same challenges, and we talk about those as well as the joys of being a creative working mom and what Heather's got planned for the future, and a lot of other things. It was a great interview, and I know you're going to enjoy it. Hi, Heather. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I'm really excited to have you on today because I just realized I have not had a musician mom on my show yet. And also, I am a huge musical freak. So when I read in your bio that you actually wrote a musical, I got so excited. I just like jumped up and down a little bit. So very glad to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm so honored to be here. I really am.
So let's back up a little to the beginning, just for people who aren't familiar with Heather, who your origin sort of came from a Brooklyn-based band, right, in the early 90s.
Yeah, I was in a band called The Murmurs. We were two girls with acoustic guitars, and we started out in Brooklyn, New York. And, okay. That was in the early 90s. And, as we went along, we got more punky and more outrageous. And that lasted for about 12 years.
Wow, okay.
And then we separated, and, in the VH1 Behind the Music kind of fun way. And then I went off and I started another band called Red Car later. And then a few years after that, I had my two beautiful boys and took kind of a hiatus, but I mean, still writing. And here I am as a solo artist.
Wow. Okay. So this is your first solo album that you've got out now called Crosswords. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a long time in coming, but this is my very first solo project as a singer-songwriter.
So how would you describe, I did listen to some of your older stuff. Like I listened to a song that I think it was a video that you had for Red Car, but I would have described it more almost folky pop sort of than punk. So what has been sort of the evolution of your, not that I'm any kind of an expert, so please feel free to educate me, but has your sound changed since The Murmurs in a different direction?
Well, yeah. I mean, just from life's experiences and growing up, I mean, it's when I listen back to the early Murmurs albums, they're just so innocent.
Okay.
And we were hippies. I mean, we really believed in peace. I mean, we wanted to be babies of the 70s, I think. Right. I mean, we were babies of the 70s, but we wanted to be, I think, older, like right. teenagers in the 70s.
Right.
we were bringing it back. Let's just bring the flower power back.
Right.
And so anyway, the content was a lot more, about flowers and bumblebees and hope. And then, life kind of takes its path. And then and also just growing as musicians. I mean, we just picked up guitars. We were like brand new at playing, playing the guitar pretty much. And then as we've gone on, we've had the opportunity to work with all these wonderful musicians and had so many wonderful mentors along the way that eventually it kind of leads you to a place where you want to be good and you really care about the musicianship and you really care about what you're saying, and you realize the impact it has. So not that we didn't before, but it was just a different point of view. And well, so Graham, as a solo artist, definitely with that same pop sensibility that I had when I was younger, because I think that that's something that is just a part of me. But of course, the content is a lot deeper.
And it's funny because I know that when I was in my early 20s and sort of in my own bumblebees, I love that, my bumblebees phase. You do feel like what you're saying is really profound, and it is in a certain way, but it doesn't have the touch of time on it yet.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. I love that.
Yeah. It's profound without context or something.
Yeah. It's your own, as much depth as you can have, at that age. And granted, life, and I know, we all have like intense journeys, up until, when we're first kind of in our early 20s, of course. I mean, I don't want to underestimate that.
Right.
I know I did, but at the same time, just for me, as far as being an artist and writing, what I was willing to express and ready to express was, just, I think, a little more compartmentalized.
Mm, okay. So tell me about now, I just want to make sure I get this timeline right. So it was the early 90s, it was when The Murmurs started, and then you were kind of on that path for about, you said about 12 years?
Yes.
Or so. Okay.
Yeah. In my band called The Murmurs. Yeah.
Yes. And then so your sons, who are 4.5-year-old twins, and that was around the time that you kind of stopped playing with the band and were writing and doing other things. Or am I getting the timeline wrong here? Play this out for me here.
So no, I did that for 12 years, and then I wrote a musical, which you had.
Oh, right.
Yes. I wrote a musical, and I had, you know, a couple of other bands, but one significant one was called Red Car.
Okay.
And then my partner and I, wanted to really bring these babies into the world. So, and that took some time. And so then, yeah, then I kind of, that's what my life became about, my boys.
So how, let's back that up to the musical. I'm just really curious how that happened. Like, were you working on a musical and then managed to get it produced? Or was this something that just an idea that came to you later? I'm so curious about this. Please tell me about it.
Well, I grew up loving musicals. And so it was something as a songwriter that I had always wanted to do. I'd always wanted to write a musical. And I had some friends that kind of came to me and said, you know what, if you have something, we want to be a part of it. We want to help you put it on in LA. And so that really lit a fire, in me. And I wrote a musical. It was called Dear Bernard, and it was inspired by my mom's story. My mom came here as an au pair in the late 60s from England. And she started out as an office girl, but then kind of got discovered as a hand model. And,
and
I embellished that story a little bit and made it about this English girl that came over. And she became one of the hugest working, you know, body parts model in the country. Oh, and and it was just kind of a flamboyant story, like, you know, bringing in Studio 54 kind of.
Right. Okay.
It was really fun and flamboyant. And the tagline was, in order to find herself, she had to fall to pieces. So literally, just, you know.
Yeah.
She was never known for her true self, just for her parts.
Oh, okay. So, and this was produced in London?
No, yes? This was actually produced here in Los Angeles.
LA, okay.
And then we did go to London, and we started to bring it into development. And it never did see its way all the way through. But we did. We went over there and we started casting it, and we kind of got it started. But unfortunately, we just never got the funding that it needed to go all the way. And then I came back here, and life just keeps moving forward.
Right. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, two bairns were born.
So tell me about that, like the experience of now. I mean, we all, the listeners here are mostly moms, so they understand the experience of actually having children. What they might not get is the experience of trying to get back into the music industry as a mom, and how different that must be from how it was before. And how do you manage that?
That's a really great question, and I'm kind of figuring that out as I go along. Like, for example, last night, I live in Los Angeles, and last night I had a show in San Diego, and it was a great opportunity. So I said, okay, I'm going to do it. And I thought I had more time than I did. And it was just a really personal moment, but I ran out, and I knew I was going to take my car. I ran out and I thought, okay, there's plenty of room in the trunk for all my guitars. It took me like 5 trips to unload my car. With, like, there were kites, there were footballs, there were scooters, there were, you know, backpacks, extra clothes, this, that. It was really funny. And anyway, so then, but then I went to San Diego and did the show, and I left. You know, I was like, what are you doing after the show? Where are you staying? I said, oh, I'm going, I have to get home. And so, you know, I didn't get home until about 1:30, and then, you know, at like maybe quarter to six this morning, my kids, I heard them running down the hall.
Like, yeah.
Headed my way. I'm holding my eyes open.
Well, I can imagine that it's like anything else. Like, I've written some books. So there's always like a very intense time when you launch a book.
Mm-hmm.
And at first people are calling you and they're wanting you to do this or that media appearance. And you're like, yes, yes, yes. You're saying yes to everything. And then at some point you start to get picky because of those early mornings, and because you just realize I can't keep up this pace forever. Like, I have to be really choosy about what's going to move me forward. And, you know, what are the opportunities that are going to move me forward and those that aren't. But I think it takes a while.
That's such a great, that's a really great point. Because, I mean, and I've said that to, like, I have a wonderful team that's helping me with my career. And I did say to them, I said, guys, you know, obviously my priority are my children, my family. And I just have to make sure it's worth it. And I was a little bit nervous about, you know, even just going to San Diego, like, is this an important show?
Right.
So yeah, I understand what you mean. Cause you do want to say yes to all the opportunities, but yeah, it's a juggle for sure.
It is. I think that we're kind of in a cool time. And I'm seeing it happening around me in the mom, blog, author, TV personality kind of space where you can be choosy because there's so much you can do from home. There's so much you can do remotely. And you can really make your own opportunities in a lot of ways in a way that wouldn't have been available to you 5 or 10 years ago. So, you know, I can do interviews from my house.
I know. It's incredible.
Yeah. And women are shooting video, like professionally produced videos and TV series from their living rooms. So it's
guess what?
It's really
guess what else they're doing? They're doing concerts from their living rooms.
Okay. So the
musicians doing concerts. So I'm going to be, I mean... My audience is going to, you know, the family's going to be in the audience, the live studio audience.
And, you know, it's interesting that you said that you're doing this studio audience in your living room, you know, with your family in as your audience. I think that's another thing that's changing is that I feel like when I started as a writer about 10 years ago, I would still get very nervous if my kids interrupted something that I was doing from home. Like, I felt like it was very shameful to work from home, and I didn't want anyone to know that that was what I was doing. I wanted to feel very professional and have everyone imagine me in this high-rise office somewhere. But I think that that's changing. I really feel like it's becoming more acceptable for your home and your life and your work to all kind of intertwine.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, and I think I think it's even more admirable because the multitasking that's taking place is what people without kids, I don't think that they can quite understand what it's like.
I totally agree. So let's talk about your album and your music. So tell me about Crosswords. How long has it been out? Just give me the whole spiel.
Okay, here's the spiel. Crosswords was just released on March 3rd of this year. And I'm just getting going with it. It's an album about resilience through hard times and relationships. It's an album about transitions. And it's about love, and it's about, without being cliche, heartbreak. But like I said, the finding the resilience, and the optimism and the message in that. So, And it's got, you know, I'm a songwriter. And as I said earlier, I have this, I love pop music, and I just, I can't get away from it. And that's just kind of what my tendency is to go for melodically when I'm writing. So it's got a pop sensibility, and that's it. That's my spiel. What do you think?
That's a great spiel. Hey, I asked you for the, I asked you to give me the summary, and that was a good one. So we're going to play. And this would probably actually be a good place to do it, although you and I won't play it right now. But I will insert in the clip a little bit later of one of your songs. So let me know, which one would you want me to play here?
I think Be Mine
Tonight.
To get a feel. Be Mine Tonight would be great.
Be Mine Tonight. Okay. You would wish it was another place and time. Hard on yourself, found everyone around. And I thought, screamed from the top of my mountain. So Heather, tell me about what we've just heard, and sort of where the idea from the song came from, and another spiel.
Okay. Well, we just heard Be Mine Tonight, and Be Mine Tonight is basically about staying present in your life and not sweating the small stuff and not being so consumed, you know, with the things, the little things that, that don't matter but get in the way. And I think so many of us, not to generalize, but I think that a lot of us get bogged down on the things that don't worry. And sometimes all that worry just takes up such valuable space when we could be living in the moment. So it's about that. And in this case, it was like referring to a relationship, you know, a relationship with someone else. But I also think it pertains to just the general feeling about life, which is not sweating the small stuff and being present.
I love that. And I think it's something that moms can really relate to, and anybody really who's trying to balance a life filled with so many distractions that we have. And there's so much we're supposed to care about right now.
Yeah, that I agree. And, you know, I actually I performed with a poet, Andrea Gibson, last night. And one of her lines was she said something about, you know, I write about where I want to be, where I strive to be, not where I am. Mm. And I thought that was really cool. And anything Be Mine Tonight, if I'm just going to take from that, Be Mine Tonight, it reminds me of that. It's just kind of, that's my message. It's like, you know, there's a line, scream from the top of the mountains, bearing your soul. And, yeah, just let it out, get that angst out and, right. Let it go.
So, I love what you just said about trying to write for where you want to be. And I think that that's something that no matter where you are, there's a lot of talk right now. And I see this a lot in the space I kind of live in, occupy online, which is the blogging, author, social media kind of space. And there's a lot of talk about being authentic and what that means. And some people seem to think that that means telling everything exactly like it is all the time, which for most of us looks kind of messy and warty. And then there's that sort of that flip side of being like everything's super shiny, happy. And I sort of try to meet this middle ground where when I write something, I don't really want to share all, everybody knows all the ugly stuff, right? And it's out there and I want to talk about it, but I always want to be talking about the way I want to write the story, the way I want it to end, I guess. And I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
Yeah, it does.
But like working, you know, and I think that that is honest and that is out there. We all want to write our own stories and we want to make them be the best that they can be and maybe work toward an ideal, even if we know we're not really going to get to the ideal and that the other people around us aren't there either.
Right. We're not alone in that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a different kind of being, it's a different kind of honesty. I don't know. I like that. I like, it's, and it's funny because I like deep music that's, talks about heartbreak, like you said, but in sort of a positive way, which is kind of, it sounds like an oxymoron, but it's not.
Well, you can't get, it's not, it's, you can't, I mean, look, everyone's been through heartbreak. And, right. You know, when you're in it so deep, it's hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel, I think, for people. So I don't want to underestimate that experience.
Right.
But you know what? There are always two sides to every story, and all of us have our part in the story. We all have a role, and I think it's learning from that and learning what we didn't want to see and learning. It's such a great opportunity to kind of take ownership for yourself and learn and just say, okay, well, what can I do differently next time? And hopefully not get jaded and hopefully, you know, find love again. So yeah, I'm all about getting back up again.
So do you feel like that's the kind of thing where you really have to put some distance between yourself and the experience before you can have that sort of outlook on it? Or is it the kind of thing you can write about when you're right in the middle of it and still not have it and still be able to see enough over the crest?
Right. I think that's a good question, a really good question. I'm just thinking, you know what? Sometimes I think it's both. I think sometimes, you know, I've there have been moments where I've written because I just need to get things off my chest and I'm channeling it at that time.
Right. Yeah.
And so, no, maybe it's not, you know, it's not my brightest hour. It may not be my darkest hour. But I think it, for me, it's different every time. But I am generally, I'm an optimist by nature. Hmm. So even when it's really difficult and I'm really sad, what I am doing is I am always looking for the light. I'm always looking to see how it's going to get better. And
yeah, that makes sense.
I'm not saying that I don't sit with it and that I don't deal with, you know, if something's painful, I feel the pain and I do deal with that. But I just feel like my perspective is that life is short and I want to get back on my feet in the healthiest way possible.
And maybe the writing about it helps you again, like shape the story that you want.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. I would like that. More, see, profundity with context. That's what we've got going on today.
Wait, I missed that. What did you say?
I said profundity with context is what we have going on today. So let's talk about the life of working motherhood as you experience it. It's so different for everybody. And I know for me, it means a lot of getting up earlier, staying up late, writing and working around, you know, kids being here and there. And it's always very interesting when it's like summer break or Christmas break or spring break, like we're all going into now. So tell me about your experience and how logistically, how does this work?
I'm kind of going through that right now because the album, when I was writing this album and in the studio and the content of the album has, you know, this, I've been trying to make this album for, I think, 2 years. So the content has definitely changed over the last 2 years of what it ended up becoming. But because, you know, because of my kids, like if they were home from school and I would have studio days booked and I'd have to cancel. And, you know, in the past it was like, oh, I'm going into the studio. This is where I'll be for the next 3 months. I have writing sessions. This is where I'll be for the next month or two. But very different now because my kids take priority and there's nothing you can, you know, if they're home from school and they're not well, then I have to be there.
Right.
And that's how it is in my case. So, I mean, I want to be there. I want to take care of them. And so now it's hard because also when they, when my kids go to bed at night, I want to go to bed too. I'm exhausted.
I know. Yeah. Yeah.
I've always, even when I was 17, my best friend used to give me a hard time. She's like, Heather, you're only 17. Come on. Let's stay. What do you want to go to bed? It's like 10 o'clock at night. So I've always been like a go to bed early person. So the staying up late, which is really a great opportunity for me to get that work done, is not easy because at 9 o'clock I am zonked. It's challenging. And also I have to say, I want to be with them. I want to work and I feel so blessed for the opportunity of being able to juggle career and, you know, and family, but I want to be with them all the time. So this is definitely an interesting journey right now. And, I have to admit I'm new at it because I haven't really been in a position where I've had to do this much juggling yet.
Right.
Now that they're
well, foreign. And for me, it's very different to be in the creating phase and the promotion phase. And they have completely different energy.
Yes.
And I really like them both, but for me, like the promotion phase can only be, the last book that I wrote was traditionally published book that was like on the actual physical bookshelves and not just an internet thing, came out in 2011. And it's just now that I feel like I could do it again. Like it's taken me years because it's not the creating. I mean, I can write and also, you know, sounds like what in your situation, you're leaving the house and you're going to a studio and there's that little bit of that separation between work and home. And you can just go pound it out and get it done. And you're like in that flow. But promotion feels to me like a lot of sort of disjointed pieces that come together in this very sort of frantic way all at once. But you still want to be creating at the same time. So it's, I don't know, it's like, it is hard. And I'm not trying to pretend like I know. I don't think any of us have all the, by the time you figure it out, your kids have moved on to some other phase and then you don't have it figured out anymore.
Right, right. Well, actually, no, the funny thing is, you know, how, what we were talking about earlier, just how technology has changed so much. I actually recorded most of this album, like 90% of my album in my, I have a little studio, recording studio in my house, and it's in off of my kitchen, next to my washer and dryer.
So, nice. Okay.
So I did, I was able to, you know, when they were at school or, you know, just those moments kind of get in there and work. But yeah, it's different now that I'm doing shows again. And like I said last night, there was just no, the show I had in San Diego, I said, there's no way I'm staying in San Diego. If I'm only 2 hours away, I'm driving back just to be at home and there when my kids wake up in the morning.
So how do you like working at home? Do you enjoy that? Do you, I know a lot of people who work from home feel conflicted about the fact that the dishes are there and the laundry is there and it can be done. Personally, I kind of like it, but tell me, like, is that a problem for you? Just having having your house around you, sucking you in to its housely vortex. Yeah.
You know what? It's I wouldn't say it's a problem. I just end up doing it. I'm like, I have to make this bed. I have to make it. You know, it's a procrastination is what it is. It's a procrastination. Right, yeah. I'm procrastinating one or the other, the housework or the studio recording or writing.
As long as you procrastinate in both directions equally, it all works out in the end.
I'm a Libra.
But so I like it. I mean, I like that I can get up and go do a load of dishes or something. And exactly. And that it's part of my day. It's part of the rhythm of my day. And it gets me off of my, off my chair and out from in front of my computer and whatever else. So I enjoy it.
It's a part of the reset.
It's interesting. I'm just picturing you making music in your house with, you know, in view of your washer and dryer. And
well, this friend of mine that I was working with, he's like, honestly, we can hear like something clanking in the dryer. You need to go.
get that pair of shoes out of there.
No one's going to even know what that is. They're going to think it's a shaker.
Right. Yes. It'll become the background to all of your future music. That's funny. Oh my goodness. I love it. Okay. So here we are. You've got this album out. You've got two songs. And how many songs are on the album?
There are 10 songs.
I say album. That's really still the way. Can you still say album?
Oh. Yes, please. We have to preserve the old school way of talking. And it's not actually, I wouldn't know not to call it an album.
Because what else would it be called? It's a body of work. I mean, you can't just call it, it's not a CD. That's too specific.
Right. You
know?
Right.
And it doesn't, I mean, who buys on CDs anymore anyway?
I know.
It was funny. Someone tried to give us a CD recently and I was just holding it going, thanks.
Where am I going to put this?
I was walking around the house going to all my computers and devices, like trying to find a button that maybe had a CD player. And I was like, wait, nope, not that one. Nope, not that one. I have no CD player.
I know.
But just like the way you said, you know, the times are different and releasing a single isn't what it was.
No,
before.
It's not what it was. I mean, some artists are just releasing song by song. Some people are doing, you know, if you download something on iTunes, let's say, they won't let you do it. You'll have to buy the whole album. You can't just download one song. So everyone's doing it differently. And there's subscription music now. So it's a very – the music industry and the way that people get their music is so different. And there's no right or wrong, and I have no judgments on how people get their music. Because I think there are so many ways that you can support an artist, whether it's an independent artist or a major label artist, let's say. It's very cool. I love that you're saying album. That's what I say.
Well, you know, I actually had a little debate with myself about this a few months ago because I kept saying album and then I thought, do I just sound really dorky that I keep saying this word? And then I thought, well, no, because to me a record and an album are not the same. You know, the album is the collection of songs.
Yes.
And the medium by which you listen to it is the record or the 8-track or
yes. And by the way, I actually tried to get a record player because I bought one of those. They have all these really cute record players available now. I don't know if you've seen them. Mm-hmm. They're Anyway, I really wanted one, so I got one. And I had all these great vinyls, and well, that was just a little premature to bring that out around the kids. Because all those records, all those vinyls are
scratched now.
Scratched up.
Yeah, we have. I got one from my brother. Got me one a few years ago, and it kind of looked old fashioned, like maybe looked like from the 40s. It was sort of this cream plastic with red writing on it. And then I realized that one of my kids, who was a toddler at the time, was just going through every day and spinning the records as fast as they could with the needle on.
Oh, that's so.
And then scratching the needle back and forth. And so I went to go listen to all these, you know, vintage albums I'd picked up here and there, and I was like, oh.
That's
cool. Well, those didn't last long.
That is very funny because my kids as well, they like listening to it on the highest speed.
Oh, yeah. And they have so a great it sounds like Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's fun. So, and talk a little bit about that, you know, about the differences now. And it sounds like this is a great time to be a music, to be an independent musician. If you kind of embrace all the possibilities and don't get stuck in the like, the way it used to be kind of a thing. And I see that a lot around, with authors and everybody else as well.
And do you feel like a lot of people are fighting, like resisting the way it is now? Or do you come across people that are, resisting?
I see both.
Cause I'm not, I'm very, okay, well, this is what's happening. And there is a learning curve. I will tell you that, but, I love it. I think it's a great opportunity. I do think sometimes that it can be a saturated market because it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to distinguish, you know, the different artists and the genres and stuff. And there's so many. But it's also what a great chance for all artists to, you know, be discovered. And that is very cool. That is a really great gift.
And I also feel like as a mom, I think it's really a great lesson for my kids to sort of watch me creating this career, to be doing what I want to be doing in a creative way and doing it, on my own terms. And I think that's something I feel like you could probably relate to as well. Like, you know, it's not like mom was a musician and then she had you guys and now had to kind of make a choice. It's more like now I'm going to be doing it in a different way, you know, in this creative way, using what's available to me today.
Yeah,
I just think that's a really powerful lesson for them to learn about creating your own path.
I agree with that.
And doing things your own way.
I agree with that. Yeah. And hopefully they'll take a similar road as they grow.
Exactly. Although, you know, by the time they get bigger, they'll probably be projecting themselves from holograms.
I was just going to say that. I was obsessed. I swear, I was, because I'm so obsessed. I'm like, when are we going to have holograms? Like, when's that?
Right.
What is going to be the new iPhone when they're all, you know, when they're in college?
You're going to press a button on your wrist and someone's going to pop out into a hologram. Wasn't that the way it was on Back to the Future 2?
Or Star Wars, I think.
We've passed, I saw something going around on Facebook recently that we've actually passed the time period that was in the movie Back to the Future 2. So all of that stuff should have already happened by now.
You mean flying around on skateboards? Air skateboards?
Yes. Yes, air skateboards should have happened by now. And I don't even remember. A flying DeLorean, all that stuff really should have already happened. So they really need to get on that.
Well, I was just having – I just had this ridiculous conversation with this was the conversation on the car ride home at 1 o'clock in the morning last night. So do you think time travel is ever really realistic? And the answer back was like, absolutely not. Because somebody would have come back and told us, okay, we're here. We're here from the future. So
right.
Good point. Anyway.
Yeah. Like they're just holding that information to themselves.
Let's stay awake.
Exactly. We've all had those. Well, Heather, we have to wrap up. This has been so fun. And I want to make sure everyone knows where to find you. So they can go to your website, which is Heather Reid Music, and it's ReidMusic.com. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. That is correct. And Facebook, I'm on Facebook at Heather Reid Music. And I'm on Twitter at Heath Music.
At Heath Music. Okay. All right. And I will link to all this stuff in the show notes as well, and your YouTube channel. and everything else. Do you also have an events calendar on your website where if
you I were do, doing a show I'm and doing some West Coast area? Dates in June. So I do have an events.
Okay. Perfect.
Section. And well, thank you so much. It's been such an honor to be on your show. And I love your blog and keep up the good work.
Thanks. It's been awesome having you on. Okay, that's it for episode 27 of the Home Hour podcast. If you want to find out more about Heather Reed or Shana Dragelis, check out the show notes at thehappiesthome.com/episode27. There will also be links to Heather's music and other things that we talked about in the show today. While you're there, I would so appreciate a rating or review of The Home Hour. It really helps more people find and listen to the show. In the show notes, you'll find instructions of how to rate and review the podcast in case you don't know how to do that. I didn't, so don't feel bad. Also, if you're curious about what setup I use to listen to podcasts in my own home, I actually wrote a whole post about that last week, and I'll link to that in the show notes as well. Again, the show notes are at thehappiesthome.com/episode27. If you want to find all of the show notes to all of the previous episodes, just go to thehomehour.com, and that will forward you to a link with all the different episodes. Okay, that's it. Thanks so much for spending some time with me today. And like always, have a great week and best wishes from my home to yours.